Today on Maine Calling, disabilities and the workplace. Only about half as many people with disabilities have a job as those who do not. There are a lot of reasons for this, including discrimination and ignorance. The numbers are improving, slowly. In 2009, about 30% of Americans with disabilities were employed. Now that number is about 38%. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the situation here in Maine for individuals with disabilities who want to keep and hold a good job. What's the law in Maine? How well is it understood or followed? And what resources are out there for employers and employees? This program is part of our series, Ready and Able, Living with a Disability in Maine. It is being streamed with an ASL interpreter on Maine Calling's Facebook page and Maine Public's YouTube channel. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to island and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Getting a job, keeping a job, none of that is easy or straightforward these days. For people living with disabilities, there are additional considerations and often obstacles. And workplaces are required by law to provide inclusive environments for all. How does that all work? Well, this show is part of the Maine Calling series, Ready and Able, Living with a Disability in Maine. We are streaming it live on Maine Public's YouTube channel and Maine Calling's Facebook page with an ASL interpreter. Joining me for the hour, David Webert, who is an employment and civil rights attorney with Johnson & Webert. He is president of the Maine Employment Lawyers Association. Lisa Sturtevant is employment coordinator for the Office of Aging and Disability Services with the Maine Department of Health and Human Services. And Kyle Pelletier. As a child, Kyle was diagnosed with a borderline intellectual disability, and he has done so much since, including working as an outreach coordinator for Disability Rights Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you or someone you know facing workplace challenges due to disability? Are you an employer hoping for assistance in improving your workplace? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. And David, I'm going to start with you because my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that the American with Disabilities Act makes it the law to not discriminate, that companies who are 15 people or larger must not discriminate. I'm thinking about Maine and all the very small businesses. Is that the law in Maine or is it different?
Nice thing about Maine is that we have the Maine Human Rights Act, which goes back before the Americans with Disabilities Act. And we were one of the first states to prohibit discrimination against people with disabilities in the workplace. And we actually have a broader definition of disability. We had a big discussion at the legislature when the ADA was broken, and we fixed it in Maine to make sure that it was inclusive and cover everybody it needed to cover. So we have a particularly good law in Maine that takes up the holes and spots the ADA misses.
So what does the law do? What are the rights of people with disabilities in the workplace?
The key thing is you have a right to reasonable accommodation. So sometimes there's an easy way to enable somebody to do the job, but it's just not the way we usually do things. Mm-hmm. And so, just maybe the door doesn't open correctly for somebody in a wheelchair. It could be, a parking space that's closer, but also maybe in the schedule, maybe in the ergonomics. There's lots of little ways, maybe the break schedule. And a lot of times for me, it's medical leave is sometimes needed. And the person just needs a break to get something fixed or take care of something. And sometimes employers don't want to wait for that and they fire the person. And so it's just really not, the employer has to not think, this is how I always do it, but is there a way I can do it that's going to work fine and keep this person, working so we don't waste all that talent in the large number of people that have disabilities.
In your experience, how well understood and well followed is this in Maine?
Well, back in 92, when I started bringing cases like this, even big, sophisticated, good employers were terrible because they would say, oh, you've got carpal tunnel syndrome. You're more likely to have a workers' comp claim. You're not hired. We're taking back the job offer. And companies have come a long way since then, and they realize it's actually bad for business, you know, to have those kind of absolute inflexible rules. So most employers are much better, but there's still a lot of stereotypes. And, you know, frankly, sometimes bosses don't like to do things any differently than they're used to doing. That's the biggest obstacle, I think, is, you know, a little bit of, I don't want to say arrogance, but my way is the only way. And once they get over that, then they realize, oh, this is fine. But it's just like a mental block or stereotype.
Kyle, let me ask you, in your experience, do you find that employers are willing to work with people who have disabilities and are doing so gladly?
I think sometimes yes and sometimes no, because like there's a lot of people with disabilities today that are not working, and it's just more getting frustrated for people with disabilities because we want to be like everyone else, and it just feels like we are just hold back on certain things, because like employees can actually people with disabilities can actually ask for accessibility things to actually help them out with things to actually make their work better.
Lisa, I know the national statistic is about 38% of people with disabilities are employed. What are the numbers in Maine?
It is about the national average. So I think it's about 40%. So we're a little bit above, and looking at some of the information from NTIDE at the University of New Hampshire, just in the last year, I think we're seeing that that's staying stable for people with disabilities, but as Kyle said, still too low. I think we know that businesses benefit from hiring people with all types of abilities. And so the things that David and Kyle are talking about is part of what we're thinking about is how do we support those businesses to successfully employ somebody? And it's a win-win for the business and the individual.
I know that your office works with both people who have disabilities and businesses who are working with people who have disabilities. I'm wondering if you can think of a couple of examples to tell us about in which a company, an employer has made a reasonable accommodation and it's all worked out pretty well and maybe even surprised everybody.
We have lots of success stories across the Department of Health and Human Services. And I want to say that, you know, we support people with various types of disabilities. So my partners at the Office of Behavioral Health, the Office of Family Independence, the Office of Children and Family Services for young adults, all of us, you know, focus on supporting those businesses. And sometimes it is, as David said, a very small accommodation. So it could be a business who understands that somebody might need a job coach, a little extra training on the job. So they're going to bring somebody in who meets their needs. And then with that, they're going to be willing to have a job coach in there to support that person, but also support the coworker, support the supervisor in learning how to maybe teach somebody differently, or as David mentioned, come up with an accommodation. So we may bring forward an accommodation or a piece of equipment or things that we can work with an employer. So we've seen very small, I think the average cost of an accommodation is, you know, less than $50. I mean, it's really, we're not talking usually large things. We've also seen success. A story that was on last year that we promoted was a young woman with a very significant disability who's working as an ed tech in a school and uses a communication device. And so again, being open to thinking about how do we support people with that bring really great skills and abilities to an employer. And in this case, the school system being really willing and able to support somebody differently.
Yeah, David, I see you nodding. I was going to say, I can tell you want to jump in. Go ahead.
The job coach can be so helpful. It could just be, you know, for a first couple of months, But a checklist is a great example of a reasonable accommodation, but really it's just smart. Like pilots and doctors benefit from using checklists, but somebody like who's stocking shelves at a Shaw's, it might take them a little longer to get the routine, but once they have a checklist, they actually might be more reliable and productive than, you know, than somebody else. So the employer realizes. I've seen people keep their job, you know, 10, 15 years after they've had a little coaching at the beginning and a checklist. And then occasionally, you know, when on high changes the rules and there has to be a change, then you might have the job coach come back and update your checklist. But, you know, that might be an employee who's never, you know, doesn't call in sick, isn't absent all the time, you know, is reliable. And so the employer says, wow, this is actually, you know, better th than the average situation we have. So a lot of times, you know, I know Shaw's in this particular example, they've been very good, you know, about doing reasonable accommodations. And I think they realize it's actually a win-win.
Kyle, I know that often a problem, the reason that somebody might not be employed is discrimination or ignorance. But I also know that another issue is how the person with a disability has been, the messages that that person has been given since they were a child. And that is part of your story, correct? That early on, you were not made to think highly of yourself. Tell us about your journey from being a kid who was diagnosed with an intellectual disability to where you are today.
Well, I got like diagnosed when I was little, and I kind of hate the word like borderline MR, and it was just more of me like every single day, like there's barriers when I went to like school, because all year I went to like special education. I got bullied as a kid from like elementary school through high school, and it was just horrible. And it made me sh like when I was I could say like when I was bullied, and when the actually the person that kind of bullied me realized how cool I really was, and he kind of like apologized to me. It kind of just made me feel I can do more. So then when I went to Job Corps after high school, I kind of really didn't know what I was going to do with my life. So I kind of took like painting external and internal, like for houses and stuff like that, as a trait. And knowing that as a person with disability, there was no way I would be able to get my driver's license in high school, because during that you had to pay for your high school. And my dad was a single dad working all the time, and I'm a person seeing that I didn't ask my dad for anything. I didn't ask my dad to go to the prom, like give me money for the prom. Didn't like ask for my high school yearbooks. And I only was appreciate the stuff that he could do, like give me like the clothes on my backpack, the food, that the roof that's over my head, and all that. It kind of pushed me to actually be the type of person I am today. And when I had my student IEP meetings, and when I turned 18, he kind of told me, listen, you're 18 now. I'm not going to put you in the system. I'm not going to have you be lost in the system. I'm going to let you make your own decisions. So I made those decisions. Yes, sometimes they were right, sometimes they were not wrong, like everyone else. No one's perfect. Then actually, it was all the part of the DD network, right? Like speaking up for us, that made me become a self-advocate, a personal speaker, doing all these trainings, like listening to all these professionals it just makes me grow as a person today. And I'm grateful that I kind of enjoy doing it. And like one of the huge barriers that you're going to hear throughout the time I'm going to talk about is like Social Security, mm-hmm. because people with disabilities are afraid to go to work because of the asset limit, mm-hmm. because people with disabilities can only make up to $2,000. $2,000 back in the old days, that will make you like a millionaire. But right now, it doesn't.
Mm. Yeah, I want to, and Kyle, that's such an important point, and I'm so glad you brought it up. I do want to circle back to one thing in your personal story, though. You said you never thought you'd be able to get your driver's license, but you have your driver's license, correct?
Correct, because I went, like, when I went to, like the Lauren Job Corps, mm-hmm. it was part of the requirement for that center for people to get a job, like, go to, if they want to go to college, it can go to college. Like, trying to find a job, you need a license. You need a car. You need to do this. You need to do that. And it's like when I did that, I had just one barrier that the person at the Job Corps, he said I wasn't ready for a license, for a car. I said, why not? I got my license. What's the next step? Is getting a car so you can make those drive to make yourself more independent in your life. And so when I did get my Social Security, I purchased my first car. I didn't have to get a loan. I didn't have to get a cosigner. Mm-hmm. I had cash right there and then.
That's a great story. Lisa, I'm listening though to Kyle and I'm thinking he's a fantastic self-advocate. Very few people with a disability or not with a disability have that ability to advocate for themselves like Kyle did. What is your advice to someone who might be listening and thinking, I'm not sure I have it in me to be a self-advocate like Kyle has been?
I think everybody can be an advocate for themselves. And Kyle is absolutely amazing and has been helping other people learn about how to, you know, be part of community and advocate for themselves. So I think there's lots of opportunity. And Kyle's one of those wonderful resources for people. I also think that connecting to groups that can assist people to meet other people sort of who are on the journey. In Maine, we have 70,000 people who are getting Social Security disability benefits. So there are lots of people who are sort of also on this journey of thinking about how does work fit in my life? And so I think, again, if you're somebody with a disability and you're thinking about employment and maybe not employed, there's lots of resources, whether it's through Disability Rights Maine or through its Department of Health and Human Services, or even a program like the Work and Benefit Counseling that we have available through Maine Health to help people talk to individuals who can help provide information that maybe will help somebody make an informed decision about what they want to do as a next step. So I think, again, lots of great resources out there and opportunities to talk to people who are also going through this or who, like Kyle, have really leading the way.
And so is what you're saying, do not just assume that you will lose your Social Security if you get a job. Please talk to someone, for example, someone at Benefit Counseling, which is, it's through Maine Med, but it's not just for people who are patients at Maine Med. David, you're nodding.
Yes, and I just wanted to follow up when Kyle said about bullying. That's like the thing I hate most in life. So that just triggers my, when I want to do something about that. So in the workplace, that is prohibited too. That's like sexual harassment's illegal. Harassing somebody because of their disability is also illegal. And unfortunately, I've had a bunch of cases like that, which are just, you know, sometimes coworkers, but it can be supervisors just being, you know, somebody's doing a good job and this person just doesn't like it or doesn't, you know, and they bully. But going back to high school, I know that just to point out good role models, Coney High School had a program where kids in the older grades would be paired up with somebody with an intellectual disability or some other disability. So they would be like with a cool kid who plays, as a star of the sports team. And it worked, that really was a great connection. And then people did realize that the younger kids were cool too. They just got to know them and realized, the stereotype is foolish. So there are ways to break through stereotypes. And once people get to know somebody, they realize, oh my gosh, this person brings all kinds of talents to the table. But the bullying is a major problem, even in the workplace, but especially in the schools that we have to work on.
Well, we are talking about disability in the workplace on Maine Calling. It's part of our series, Ready and Able, Living with a Disability in Maine. This program is being live streamed on Maine Public's YouTube team and Maine Calling YouTube page. You said team, David. And also on Maine Calling's Facebook page. And we have an ASL interpreter helping us today. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are discussing the rights of people with disabilities when it comes to employment and what can help with their search for a meaningful job. With me, Lisa Sturtevant, Employment Coordinator for the Office of Aging and Disability Services with Maine DHHS. Kyle Pelletier, who lives in Fort Kent and works with Disability Rights Maine, as well as the Maine Developmental Disabilities Council. And David Webert, employment and civil rights attorney with Johnson and Webert and president of the Maine Employment Lawyers Association. Share your comments and questions. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. And a reminder that today's show is streaming live on Maine Public's YouTube channel and Maine Calling's Facebook page with an ASL interpreter. On the line with us now is Samantha Fenderson, who is Director of the Division of Vocational Rehab at the Maine Department of Labor. Thanks so much for calling in, Sam.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Tell us about the different types of disabilities people might have who are helped by your office.
Sure. So we have, on average, maybe serve around 8,000 people and with varying disabilities. And this can range from intellectual disabilities, cognitive disabilities, psychosocial, mental health diagnosis, individuals who are deaf or hard of hearing, physical disabilities, and also we have the Division for the Blind and Visually Impaired who work with individuals who with blindness or visually impaired.
What are some of the challenges people with disabilities face in getting that job?
So there are many challenges, and some are very similar to the general public, and some of those are around financial and social barriers, such as transportation availability, lack of education or training, or options to be able to have education or training. And I think Kyle really emphasized that, and really having employment be a focus from a very young age. And having that discussion of employment early in age will really help that whole self-advocacy and that self-esteem, and not limiting the person's own abilities. And I would say, definitely accessibility to applications or the hiring process, making sure that employers' websites are accessible for all.
Yeah, talk to me about the kinds of jobs that people you work with are trying to get, and is that changing at all? Are assumptions about what kinds of jobs people with disabilities can do, is that changing at all? Is it expanding at all?
Well, I'll shift that dynamic a little bit. It's really not about the type of jobs. Vocational rehabilitation work with individuals to really look at what their abilities are, what their employment interests are, what their employment aptitudes are. So it's a really an individualized process where we're really working with the person to kind of identify what those unique talents are or their backgrounds are, and then we align that with what the job market is available in that person's specific area. So we're really looking at it of what is not available at the job, that's a piece of it, but what does the individual want to do and what are their own strengths? And we really try to enhance that through the VR services.
All right. Well, we heard Kyle talking about Job Corps, and I'm wondering what kind of programs you would like to highlight that you want people to know about, what's out there, what's working.
Well, we at VR really have a lot of opportunities to work with businesses. So we have a business team on hand, which really help to kind of educate those businesses as to what David was talking about earlier about providing reasonable accommodations. So our business team is really active in educating those employers. But then I would also say that we have opportunities to, such as progressive employment, where we're really looking at what is the person ready for? And then also the dual customer, what is the business ready for? And how do we engage both entities to make sure that we are meeting the needs of both the customer, but also the business? There is, we also provide individualized services, and this also includes self-employment. As you know, like you said, we have a lot of small employers, and so maybe working with a particular business as an employee is one avenue, but we also have the added advantage to look at self-employment.
And what kind of self-employment businesses are you talking about? What have you, tell us about some of the people you've worked with.
Well, it really varies. We have individuals who do small engine repair. We have individuals that sell their products or their services. So again, it's really based on what the individual's preferences are. And again, what their own career path looks like for them. So it could be definitely selling their wares or providing a service to a customer.
Samantha, thank you so much for calling in. Samantha Fenderson with the Division of Vocational Rehab at Maine's Department of Labor. Lisa, I'm going to throw a big question to you. You know, we hear these statistics, 38% nationally, 40% here in Maine. What is a realistic statistic? What would you like that statistic to be? What percentage of people who live with disabilities in Maine have a meaningful job?
I think it is individualized. You know, people are at different places in their lives, in their career pathways. So I love to see it as the same as anybody else without a disability. In Maine, our unemployment rate now is 3.4%, but obviously for people with disabilities, it is different. So I think, again, what I would like to see is that we work together to reduce barriers and to help people to open doors. And for people who are ready to go to work and need support, that support is there to assist them and the businesses. So I do want to just say, to tag on to Sam, with Voc Rehab, we worked with 15 people this year around self-employment. And we have seen some really neat small business startups owned by people with intellectual disabilities and autism. As part of a pilot to learn more about supporting people with needs. And we've seen somebody start a woodworking business, somebody start a residential painting company, somebody, like Sam said, creating and selling. I just listened to a young man who's in high school, but he started a soap making company. And so these are all businesses owned and operated by individuals with disabilities that are up and started in the last year in Maine. So we're really excited about some of the work going on around self-employment.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Let me rephrase my other question about statistics then and ask you, do you believe there are many people out there who could be working in a meaningful job and are not for whatever reason?
I think there are lots of people who want to work across the board with and without disabilities. And so I think, yes. And again, accessing supports or understanding. I appreciate Kyle's just everything that he shares, because I think one of the things is the raising of expectations from a very young age, that work is possible for everybody and work looks different for everybody. And so, yeah. And Kyle?
Yeah, and I want to I can never say it enough. It's like the one biggest barrier is, like I said, we need to change the asset limit, and so people will be able to have a chance to save money in their ABLOC account. So they can actually have things that they want in their lives, be more successful like everyone else in the community, say, oh, look at my beautiful truck that I just bought for myself as a person with a disability. Look at this beautiful house that I bought as a person with a disability. Be proud of things that you do in your lives. That will make a lot more value for other people that look up to people with disabilities to be out in the community to work. And the rate of employment would go up for people with disabilities if we eliminate that point, we raise the asset limit.
Okay, so Kyle, I just want to interrupt you for a second because some people may not understand what you're talking about. And tell me if I'm explaining this correctly, that to collect Social Security, you may not have assets over a certain amount. And so what you're saying is that if somebody has that beautiful new truck because they've worked hard, they may lose their Social Security, or a certain amount of money in their bank account because they've had a job, they may lose their Social Security. Is that what you mean by the asset limit?
Yeah, because like, basically, with the asset limit for Social Security, you can only have $2,000 in the bank. You can't have like more like $20,000. You can't have $40,000 or $100,000 to actually have. If you have that amount, Social Security is going to look at you and say, no, we want the money back.
Is there any movement in Congress to change that?
Yes, there, like in Congress, there's a lot of bills that are in the national level that has to do with the asset limit. And under the state level, there is two bills that are out there that passed the DHHS committee, and it's going through the channels as we speak.
Yeah, and Kyle, is you lose your Medicare too. So that's a benefit after 2 years of being on Social Security disability. And it's so bad, like Kyle said, it's been 50 or 60 years ago this was set. So just with inflation, this is now like, you know, $100 would have been, right, or something. So it's absurd on its face. And the fact that Congress hasn't made it a priority is pathetic. It's just totally blatantly unfair. And if it was people with more of a political voice, this wouldn't have happened. But, they, for whatever reason, Congress doesn't really pay much attention to these kinds of issues. It's pretty sad. And one thing I learned with one client was your deposit for your apartment counts towards the 2000. So with the cost of housing, that's almost eats up the entire 2000. So if you happen to get a gift or something, at the beginning of the month and you have 2100 in there, technically they throw you. It's just a crazy thing to put people through who already have
a real disincentive to trying to get a job.
And it's very stressful. I mean, it's I'm a lawyer and I find these rules incredibly confusing. So it's just not fair.
I think this is a question for you, David. This comes in from an email from Lorelei. Do some larger companies pay disabled workers less than what other workers make? I know of a large employer in Maine who has a disabled worker, my friend, who isn't getting paid the same as a comparable worker. What should I tell my friend to do? Thanks.
Yeah, that's a major civil rights issue. So I know Disability Rights Maine has been, working really hard on getting rid of a two-tier system that has been allowed at times for folks with disabilities to get paid less, which is just for the same job, which is just on its face, totally unfair and creating a second-class citizenship. So I'm not exactly sure what the job is, but I'm hoping that probably is illegal. And it certainly should be illegal. So I would call Disability Rights and ask them about that particular situation. It's a free service, it's a federally funded organization, and that's right up their alley, is to look at something like that. That should not be happening.
All right. Exactly, because sorry, it's like self-advocates actually, we testified on a bill under the state law that subminimum wages are no longer illegal. So a person that has a disability should not be getting paid less as anyone else. They should be paid equal pay like everyone else.
All right. Well, we do need to take another quick break. We're talking about people with disabilities finding meaningful work and what the situation is in Maine. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today's program is part of our year-long series, Ready and Able: Living with a Disability in Maine. The topic today, disability and the workplace. What challenges people with disabilities face in pursuing employment and in a work environment. Our guest today, Kyle Pelletier, who is Outreach Coordinator for Disability Rights Maine. He's also a member of Speaking Up for Us and is with the Center for Community Inclusion and Disability Studies at the University of Maine. David Webert is an employment and civil rights attorney, and Lisa Sturtevant is with the Maine DHHS Office of Aging and Disability Services. You can join our conversation 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to Facebook or Instagram. I'm going to go to an email here from Mindy. I have type 1 narcolepsy with cataplexy. I got a part-time job at a laundromat, 6-hour shifts. It was a great job for a while, and I was thrilled to find something I could do. It wasn't too long before my manager pushed me into full-time. One day during camp laundry season, I went to work, and without warning, I was told I was going to be there until the job was done, and if I didn't like it, there was the door. I didn't know what to say. I did it, ending up working 11 hours that night. It happened repeatedly, and at the end of it all, when it finally got done, it took me over a year to get my health back together. There were so many nights I couldn't even drive myself home, and I was always getting called lazy. It has made me gun shy about working for others. And so, Mindy, I am so sorry to hear this story. I'm guessing as you listen to it, David, you're not surprised.
I'm a little surprised. That's really mean. That's a really mean thing to do to anybody. And if I assume they knew about the narcolepsy, and so that was just, it's just like treating somebody like a machine that you're fine to use it up and have it, break and then replace them. I mean, it's an inhumane way to treat somebody. It's totally illegal to do that. But it's also just inhumane. I'm very sad to hear about that.
Kyle, what would you tell Mindy or anybody else who's facing something like this in the workplace? What would you want them to do?
Well, first, I want to say sorry to hear that, Mindy. And I was just tell you, say, hey, I can't do full time because I have epilepsy, and I'm sorry. I enjoy doing part time work, and it makes me more comfortable, and it makes me more able to do the job that you want me to do. Putting me full time is inaccessible for me.
We're going to go to Gary calling from Sanford. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing? So,
Great.
as I told the person that answered the phone, I retired from Social Security ODAR office, Office of Disability Adjudication and Review, in 2015. So things may have changed a little bit. But as far as the maximum amount that people can have, that's mainly for SSI.
Yes.
I mean, they can't. You still have the $2,000 limit, but you can also work. Work up to 20 hours a week. And as far as SSI goes, you can work as much as you can. It's just for every dollar you make, something comes off of your SSI payment.
Well, Gary, can you clarify for us, for people who don't know what SSI is and how that's different than what we're talking about today?
I used to explain it when I worked there. It's basically welfare for people that aren't insured with disability. With disability, you have to have so many quarters in disability in order to be able to get disability, or Social Security in order to receive your disability. SSI is for people that don't have that either they haven't worked, or like my sister, she was mentally ill and been on SSI her whole life. And then once my parents went on Social Security, she got some of the Social Security. But there's so many different rules. And just one person, like the lawyer said earlier, it's even hard for him to understand. And another thing I'd like to bring up is it's very easy to apply. You can apply online, you can apply on the phone, you can apply in person. And the key to getting your Social Security disability is to have your medical records back up what you're stating your problem is. If it's not in your medical records, you're not going to get it. And I hear people say, well, I tried 3 times and I didn't get it. Well, you don't have the medical records to back it up. Other people have tried 1 time and got it. It's just the way it is. It's a tough system.
Gary, thank you for your call and your clarification. Lisa or David, is there anything you'd like to add to what Gary said?
Yeah, I think he's saying that there's one program that you only qualify for if you've worked enough to sort of get into the system, like you would get regular Social Security when you turn 65, 66. If you're in that system and you get a disability, there's a certain benefit system. And then if you never worked enough, there's a separate system just to add to the complexity. but the $2,000 is a real, you can work, but you just can't keep any of it. So you got to spend it all. It's like, so that's what Kyle's talking about. And part of self-respect and being part of the community is usually that, you know, you save up and have things. So you have a little bit of a little nest there in case you have a bad day or two, you have something to fall back on. So it is treating people with disabilities like second, it's like they're on probation and, we think you're stealing from us, you know, like you're on probation the rest of your life. We have an obsession in this country with not letting people get a windfall who have the least. And the rich people who have way too much, we don't find that problematic. But if there's a person who gets, drinks, buys a snack with welfare money, we go crazy. And I don't know how we got into this upside down moral world, but this $2,000 limit reflects that. Like, we're punishing people for having a disability because we think they're just doing it to game the system. So we have a crazy public policy.
Gary, thank you so much for calling in. Yeah, go ahead, Lisa.
The one thing I just want to make sure people listening understand is part of what is new is the ability to set up an ABLE account. And in Maine, and I can't stress that enough, Bangor Savings Bank is partnering with the Maine State Treasurer. It is a way to set aside assets so that you don't run up against that $2,000 limit. So it does allow people to create, and we've seen people save for a home or save for a car. So I want to be clear that there is. And one of the things that the Maine Health Benefit Counseling Program can assist people with is getting access to an ABLE account. But you too can just Google an ABLE account. And in Maine, it is Bangor Savings Bank who is partnering with the state to implement that. So, and those are free accounts for people. So I think there is resources. I think, do people know about them? How do they access them and who can help them?
And an ABLE account, is that a relatively new program, Lisa?
It is. I would say it's the last 5 years, probably right before COVID. But and we're seeing that system grow where people are learning more about ABLE accounts, able to set aside assets as they return to work and qualify for that, and then use that money to pay for expenses. So again, there are some things that are relatively new that I think MayMed, and we'll make sure to have that information available to people about how to access that.
That's right. And so, and I just wanted to ask you the benefit counseling service that you mentioned earlier in the program that can advise people about ABLE accounts and other programs and options available to them. How would they find it? Would they just search for Maine Benefit Counseling Disability and would it come up?
Yeah. So it's Maine Health Benefit Counseling Services is one quick way to do it in Google. Or we can make sure that we give you that access and find it on the Maine Calling website too. But it is a great program. It is across the state and it is free. So for anybody receiving a Social Security disability benefit who is either working or wants to return to work, it is really a great resource, and I can't stress enough access for people and to know that that's available.
All right, we're going to go to Lizzie, who's calling from Millinocket. Hi, Lizzie, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am disabled, and I'm curious about how the current backlash against DEI in the federal government may impact those of us who wish to return to work. And then I have a quick additional question. Is that, like, the resources you're discussing on this show, will they be available somewhere for us to access after the show?
Yes. At maincalling.org. But also, Lizzie, the first question you have is a good one. And I'm wondering, David, do we know how this, the language, the policies that are making DEI, striking DEI services from so many layers of government, are they going to affect people with disabilities looking for a job in Maine?
They literally did. So the executive order, which is, you know, has one foolish thing upon another, but it included accessibility in its definition of, you know, bad DEI. And a lot of people, accessibility usually would refer to people with disabilities and their right to have equal opportunities and full enjoyment of things. So there's been some backtracking on that. I've seen in some of the Department of Justice, like they're putting all these restrictions on grants to nonprofits and the like. And I think they're trying to clarify, but it doesn't apply to disability discrimination. But there was a lot of confusion about that. And then just hostility to our civil rights laws. If you don't like, not, you know, sex discrimination being illegal or race discrimination being illegal, that's the same sort of law that protects against disability discrimination. So the backlash against civil rights, because it's political correctness to treat people equally, if that's your theory, then it is really bad for disability rights that require reasonable accommodation, because you can look at that, you know, as a preference or some kind of unfair advantage for people with disabilities. If you're of the mindset that, you know, that we should do nothing to make up for sex discrimination or race discrimination. So it is a worry that this whole movement is basically trying to eradicate the civil rights laws. It's basically saying, you know, don't follow the civil rights laws. And it's pretty scary to have a president of the United States, you know, putting that in executive orders.
Lizzie, thank you for your question. I'm going to go to an email here from Janet, try to squeeze this in. Janet writes, given that there is greater awareness of disabilities, is that at all encouraging small employers in Maine to hire people with disabilities? For example, mom and pop stores, town offices, etc. If yes, great. If not, what can community members do to get more people hired? So Kyle, I'll turn to you. What can people in small towns and larger towns around Maine to try to encourage sort of a better world?
Well, I think it's more of like opening up opportunities, like to have them volunteer and in their business to actually do some work with the job coach and build up their skills. So when the employer knows that they're doing actually a fantastic job and they know that there's a job opening, that they can say, I really love the job that you did when you come volunteer with us with job coach, and I would love to hire you part-time. So would you be interested in working with us? So it's just more awareness out there to tell people with disabilities that employers are opening up for people with disabilities to actually go to work and actually give them more of that volunteer opportunities.
Lisa. David. Go ahead, David.
One ray of sunshine is Spindleworks in Brunswick, Maine, where it's an art studio that has all kinds of really cool art at affordable prices. You go in and buy, and it's folks with intellectual disabilities working with other artists in a totally collaborative situation. And the art is incredible. And people come in and meet the artist, and then they will commission things or, you know, ask for extra things or buy the art that's on sale.
And it's long, it's been there a long time. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to have to cut you off because I just looked at the clock. It's always, it's always a bad thing to do, look at the clock, but we have to go. David Weber was with us for the hour, employment and civil rights attorney with Johnson and Weber, who is president of the Maine Employment Lawyers Association. Also with us for the hour, Lisa Sturtevant, employment coordinator for the Office of Aging and Disability Services with the Maine Department of Health and Human Services, and Kyle Pelletier, who was diagnosed with a borderline intellectual disability as a child and now works as outreach coordinator for Disability Rights Maine. Today's sound engineer is Sam Tracy. We had help from Nick Godfrey, and thank you to our ASL interpreter, Julia Schaefer. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.